Truma. Parshas Truma, of course, is the building of the Mishkan. And if only we could imagine, we could picture the Mishkan, what it looked like, we would have a better appreciation of all of the psukim that refer to the Kelim of the Mishkan. Regarding the Menorah, at least, something which we have, and not in the sense that we have the Mishkan Menorah, but in the sense that we have a Hanukkah Menorah, we should be able to try to picture what it looked like, what it was like to have a Menorah in the Mishkan. And in that regard, I'd like to share with you two issues that are halakhos rishayim, halakhos derabbanan and other rishayim regarding the placing of the Menorah. And these two issues, there are many halakhos regarding the Mishkan, but these two issues are unique that we have a way of picturing it and remembering. Issue number one. When you went into the Mishkan, into the building, on which side was the Menorah? On the left, on the right? When you went in, you were facing Maariv, Mizrach Maariv. And the Menorah is on one side. Which side? Well, in order to know, we just have to remember the way we place it in Shul. In Shul, we place it on the southern wall, while facing Mizrach, the south is to the right. We place the Menorah on the southern wall. In the Mishkan, in the Beit HaMikdash, similarly, the Menorah was on the southern wall. When you're facing Maariv, the southern wall is to your left. Now that is not an item of dispute. Everyone agrees the Menorah was on the southern wall. The dispute is how it was placed. Were the Kanim, that is the seven branches of the Menorah, lined from east to west, or from south to north? What I mean to say is, when you walked in, how did you see the Menorah? It was on the southern wall, the wall to your left. Was the Menorah flush against the wall so that the Kanim of the Menorah lined up from the entrance to the far wall? That would seem to be the most efficient way of positioning it. And indeed, most Rishonim learned that's how it was positioned. The Rambam, however, was positioned southern to Dar. It was positioned from along the width of the wall, from the left to the right side of the building. So when you walked in, you saw facing you the seven Kanim. Again, the question is, how is it in Shul? Don't you picture it? Many Shuls line the Menorah. They have the Sheva Kanim line from north to south, others from east to west. Indeed, the Mishnah Berurah brings both Minhagim. And the reason for the two Minhagim is because they were two opinions. I remember all the years in Tervidas, we angled it. The Menorah was put at an angle. And I imagine that, assuming it was done deliberately, was for a reason similar to the way we angle the mezuzah. Since the Mahalik is out of position, it would try to be yitzah both shittas. So here too, we used to angle it, be yitzah a little bit of each shittah. Anyway, this is the first Mahalik, the Rambam and Rishayim, how the Menorah was positioned in the Mishnah. A second Mahalik, when was the Menorah lit? Well, we all know. Every evening, that's what we like in Iran. Well, most Rishayim hold that it was lit every evening, and that was that. The Rambam, again, has a Dasi Yachid, he has a different opinion. The Rambam holds that it was lit any time it went out. It had to burn constantly, literally. And when it went out, it was lit again in the morning. He said, Karbanis, they were Maitiz Esaneiris, which means they cleaned out the neiris of the Iran. According to the opinion of the Rambam, every Hatzava had a Hatzlaka. Every time they cleaned it, they lit it, so that every morning when they cleaned the Menorah, they also lit the candles of the Menorah, the lights of the Menorah, every morning. And again, I would guess that on Hanukkah we do sort of a Bishara in this. We light every night, we should take right in. The lighting of the Menorah in the Shul, though, is done again in Shacharis. Why do we do it again in Shacharis and Shul? I would suppose, once again, we're trying to make a Bishara. The Rambam holds, it was lit by day, other Rishonim hold not. The focus on the Menorah, therefore, is only by night. But in the Shul, which is similar to the Mishkan, we light it by day. And anyway, these are two fundamental machlokes in the manner in which the Menorah was placed and in the lighting of the Menorah, the way it was lit. Parshas Truma, Rav Palm, often spoke out the following concept regarding giving tzedakah. I'd like to share it with you. The part used to say, there are shtei midais b'nei shtei tzedakah. There are two types of people who give tzedakah. There are some people who give tzedakah because they see a need. They see a poor person. Or they see a yeshiva that needs a new building. They see a need, and they step in and very nobly fill that need by giving money to the poor family or by giving the yeshiva that which it needs. And certainly that's a proper attitude in giving tzedakah. There's a second attitude in giving tzedakah. There's an attitude that something important is happening. I want to be part of it. Maybe yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael that has 5,000 talmidim. I want to have a piece of it. I want to have a little bit of it. I want to be part of it. And a person participates not because he sees a need, but because he feels he doesn't, that he doesn't want others to have this fuss and he'll be left out. That's for sure. He wants to have a piece of it. There are people that will give some donation to every yeshiva in their neighborhood. Why do these people do it? Because they don't want the yeshiva in the neighborhood to be running, they have to have at least a little piece of it. That's the second way of giving. Now, there's a very big difference between the two. The first person who sees a need and gives is a giver. He's giving. The second person who sees a davar shebekdusha and wants to have a piece of it is a makabel. He's receiving. When he gives the money, he's actually not giving because he sees the need. He's giving because he wants to receive a favor. He wants to be a part of that which is taking place. And certainly, there's a higher level of nobility, of holiness, in the second type of person. This week's parasha begins, the yikul be truma. Take for me, charity. Truma, donations. Everyone is. Why didn't say the yikul take? A person is giving, not taking. According to Rav's analysis of people who give, the yikul is absolutely appropriate. Because when it came to giving for the Mishkan, we didn't give because we saw a need. God needs a place to stay. That's for sure. It's that there's a Mishkan going up, and I want to have a piece of it. I want to be a part of it. The donors are actually the common people again. The yikul leads shmig into shma. Because when someone gives for such a thing, because he sees the importance of the institution, that is giving in a noble way, in a way that you feel fortunate to be receiving. When you give, you're actually receiving to be a part of it. And that's a much more noble way of giving tzedakah. People today, you'll give tzedakah for all these silly schoolers that are advertised, and people fall for it, they give. They're purely giving the tzedakah for the first time, assuming it's tzedakah, who knows, often among your neighbor. But he's giving because he wants to have he wants to receive a segula. He's not giving because he sees something holy, he wants to have a piece of something holy. It was a person who told me that they saw this latest ad with 1,000 shayfers, latest absurdity, which has nothing to do with the Jewish religion. And he gave how much? They want $36 a month. They said to him, you give $36 a month to Lakewood? You give $36 a month to Mir Yerushalayim? How is it that a person, for a silly schooler, feels like giving? And when there's a holy need, he doesn't feel the nobility to be part of something great. How can it be you come to heaven? God will say, you didn't see my yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael, and you didn't participate in any of them. You didn't see yeshivas in your neighborhood, and you didn't participate. That's a much more noble way of giving tzedakah. But Paul went here to answer something else with this idea. The Nesiim said, well, the building of Mishkan, whatever is needed at the end, we will give. And then he derided for that. And before you may ask, why did he derive it? It's great. Imagine if any Tzedakah institution had a donor that said, whatever's needed at the end, I'll give it. Sounds great. Says Rav Pong, yeah, it's great. If you're for the first time. If your donor is giving because you see a need, your heart goes out, you say there's a need, whatever's needed, I'll fill in it. I'll do it. It's true, that's a good way to give Tzedakah. But the more holy way of giving Tzedakah, of saying, I want to have a piece of that. I don't want it to go without me. Somebody who has the attitude that the Mishkan will go up anyway, God doesn't have a need for me. I'm doing it because I want a piece of it. Someone like that wants to be a yikuli truma, will not have the attitude of the Nesiim. And indeed, what happened to the Nesiim at the end? They had holy, their valuable stones fall at their door and they donated it to the Mishkan. As if to teach them, the yikul, when you give to the Mishkan, you're generation will not give the money. Well, rather, our generation will not see the place of Mikdash. Nevertheless, let's donate. It was an ultimate type two tzedakah. He wanted to have a chelek in it. And when they finished, the donations were complete. David HaMelech said, Vayivarech David, that which is different Hayom and Perichov Tez that we say every day in Davening. He said that as a Vayivarech HaBracha, after the people gathered and gave tzedakah with this noble, holy idea. And now you know why there's a minig Arizal to give tzedakah deliberately when we say Vayivarech David. Because at the time that we say Vayivarech David, at that moment, the time that we remember people who gave tzedakah with this extraordinary motivation. And so this is our top idea in the giving of tzedakah, a very scientific and important idea. Let me end with a couple of questions. The Mesha Chachma, in the beginning of this week's parasha, says on the first word of the parasha, where it says that the donations of the to the Mishkan, well, they is called Ish Ashir Tzedu Levi. Any man who wanted to give. Why does it say man? Why does it mention Dafka, a man who wanted to give? So to that, the Mishnah Chachma says, because in Halacha we have a concept that women are not supposed to be giving large amounts of money to tzedakah without the husband's agreement. Because part of the marriage agreement is that the husband is in charge of the expenditures, the wife actually spends them, but the husband has a right to veto expenditures. The fifth college had a problem with this. The idea that that a man has a right to decide on the spending of the money is based on a trade-off. A man is responsible to support his wife, to his wife. Now, in exchange for that, whatever she earns, it's up to the husband as far as how to spend. And that idea is subject to the woman's approval. If she wants, she says, Amy, there's Amy's, maybe I said, she can opt out. It's up to her. What's going on here in the Midbar? The husband didn't give the Zionist to the wife. The mom fell, like a Mishmark who gave the Zionist. So this whole concept that he's referring to seems to be an incorrect or inappropriate for the Dara Midbar, the Tzarzian. What were the kelim that were used with the Mishkan? So Rashi says that they were kelim, they were U-shaped kelim. And these U-shaped kelim were used to bake and then to hold the bread of the Lechem Aponim. The bread of the Lechem Aponim in special forms. Rashi says they were two. There was one in which it was baked that was made out of iron and a parzel, and one which was held for honor was made out of gold. Wonderful. And a passion. In the beginning of this discussion, they united the material needed for all the cable was that they said they should flee the Krishna race listed in the parsha. Parzel is not listed. There's no iron that was donated. The Rashi indicates that the iron from which these cable were made is from Krishna race. And therefore, why wasn't Barzal on the item that was donated? I'll end question number three, a very nice Shiloh, which I saw in one of the films, a Purim Shiloh. I just show you. Rabbi Yosef wrote out a 1,000 shekel check for the Thomas Lodge item and gave it to a Gavit Sadok. An American thought, they told him, you know what? I'll buy the 1,000 shekel check of Rabbi Yosef from you for $1,000. And he purchased it from him. Of course, the purchaser didn't cash the check. He saved Rabbi Yosef's check for bank up to have it his own. Question. Was Rebel Yosef Yaitza a Thomas Lev Yaitza? The check was never cashed. Sounds like an interesting child, if I remember. Next week, I'd like to share with you an insight. In the meantime, wishing everyone an absolutely wonderful Shabbos.